Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website. Keep all my interview archives there. More than 3,000 of them now, going back to 2003. And, of course, we're here live from 3 to 5 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, on the Liberty Express. And our next guest today is Ted Snyder. He's been writing lately for Antiwar.com. Quite a few good ones there. This one is Ukraine and 21st Century Coups. Welcome back to the show. Ted, how are you doing?
Hi, Scott. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Very good to have you here. And, first of all, why don't you start with the same place you start in the article, a little bit of background about this sort of American patent, the great successes, if you can call them that, short-term successes anyway, of the CIA, lo, these many years in overthrowing other people's governments short of Iraq-style invasion regime changes here.
Right. So what I've been looking at, Scott, is what seems to me to be a paradigm shift in coups since Obama became president. By their nature, coups are, they're secret. By their nature, a coup is a secret way of removing a government. But it seems that under the Obama administration, coups have become so secret that they're not even recognized to have happened. So in the third quarter of the 20th century, from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, you get coups in places like Iran and Guatemala and Chile, but there seem to be coups because they end with tanks on the streets and gunshots and violent changes of government. What seems to be happening under Obama is that we're getting these changes of government, but rather than tanks being used as weapons, it's like democracy is being wielded as a weapon because the coups look like constitutional, democratic things that happen in parliaments. And so they're not even seen to have happened until you look more closely at the patterns and see that these democratic coups are actually coups in the disguise of democracy.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, where say in Iran in 1953, the CIA rent these mobs to cause chaos in order to make the case that Mossadegh couldn't control the chaos. In this case, it's when the Shah comes back, you can tell that that was basically an excuse. Like you say, the tanks come out, and he's got to use the iron hand to stay in power and all of that. That in these cases, what they're doing is they're whipping up the crowds and then just pretending that this is the majority. They deserve the power that they're getting, even if they're the people who lost the last election.
So I think, Scott, two things are happening here, and one of them we talked about on your last show because it was especially relevant in Egypt at the time, but now the second one's becoming relevant because of Ukraine. So what you had in 53 in Iran and 54 in Guatemala is, the American hand getting mobs in the street looking like disorder, governments have lost control, and that justifies the domestic military stepping in and restoring order where there was the appearance of none. So it starts off as covert, but it ends up overt. It ends up visible. Then what you get now is you get this idea that you can get these mobs in the street, and all these changes lately that we're happening, we're seeing in Venezuela, in Iran, in Brazil, Turkey, Egypt, Ukraine. They all have these mass protests in the street. But if you look closely, the numbers in the street, the people in the street, they're the same people that lost in the polls. And one of the features of democracy is it's the majority or the largest minority, and not the unanimity that gets to choose the government. So if you have a government losing an election, so the government wins an election, the losing side has 40% of the vote. That's too small to elect a government, but it's a massive number of people in the street, and in the polls, you're silent. But the noise that number can make on the street makes it look like a huge social democratic movement. So we get these huge movements of people who are really just the same people that lost to the polls, trying to achieve on the street what they couldn't achieve on the polls. And then one of three things happens. Either the domestic military steps in and restores order. That's what happened in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. at the end of the 20th century, you get this new model. Noam Chomsky called it humanitarian imperialism. And then Dana Johnson wrote about it in her book on Yugoslavia, Fool's Crusade, because she says it came up in Yugoslavia, where you get this realization that any minority group who lost in the polls don't have the strength to win an election, don't have the strength to get their own military on their side, so they can't change the government through elections or military, has to create a situation to invite another military, an outside military, to come in. So what you do is you create the appearance of a humanitarian crisis. And that justifies America or NATO coming in on the grounds of a humanitarian crisis. So we saw that in Kosovo, you know, in the Ukraine. We've seen that attempted in Syria and Libya. You're seeing a similar thing being tried in the streets of Venezuela today. So that's the second way. The third way, if you're not creating this look of the minority in the polls being the majority in the street, is this model of making it look like the constitutional shufflings of parliament. So you make a coup look like something that just happened in the parliament. So I think the first time we saw this under Obama was in Honduras.
Mm-hmm.
So in Honduras, you get the democratically elected president, Zelaya. He gets kidnapped, whisked out at gunpoint, flown out. And what happens then is after he's kidnapped in this coup is you get the Supreme Court declaring his actions unconstitutional, and you get the Congress voting to remove him. So it looks all very constitutional. In fact, it's not, and U.S. Embassy cables show that they knew full well this was a coup. The cables say that, and the cable, by the way, was called, if there's any doubt, the cable, the U.S. Embassy cable, was called Open and Shut, the case of the Honduran coup, right? So this is like an almost comic lack of subtlety that they clearly thought nobody would see. But in it, they say there's no doubt the Supreme Court and the Congress conspired an illegal and constitutional coup. So they knew about it.
And by the way, this is just a small footnote. Sorry to interrupt. But isn't it the case that at the time Obama said, hey, yeah, that's not right. I don't know if he used the C word or not, but he said, hey, yeah, you can't do that. And then Hillary Clinton said, yeah, you can. And then Obama backed down because it was Hillary Clinton and her friend Lanny Davis was, you know, working for the coup guys or something like that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, State Department and the White House had different messages on this. They never did officially call it a coup. They never withdrew their ambassador. They never suspended all the funding. They recognized the coup government. They pressured the Organization of American States to recognize the coup government. The guys that were involved in this were the same guys that were involved in the American, or the same guys involved in the 2002 Venezuelan coup. So this was a coup, but what it looked like was the Supreme Court saying that what Zelaya was doing was unconstitutional. Zelaya introduced a plebiscite. He was asking the Hondurans, do you want a new constitution? One of the questions in the constitution was going to be, should a president be allowed to stand for a second term? What happened is the opposition said that what Zelaya did was he said he was going to stand for a second term. The court said that's illegal. The Congress voted. They whisked him out. So to the world, this looks like the Supreme Court saying what you're doing is wrong, the Congress voting him out. But in fact, what looks like a parliamentary thing is a set-up coup. You know,
well, that's sort of the Chile model from the Allende coup, right?
Yeah, with Allende, though, you eventually do get, you know, violence in the streets and stuff. So
sure.
It's something that's seen more. So Honduras is totally subtle. No one notices this is a coup, right? And then shortly later in Paraguay, so we're still in Latin America, you get the exact same thing happen. In fact, people call this one a parliamentary coup. So what you get in Paraguay is the same thing. You get a president there, and you get this skirmish over disputed land where a number of people get killed. The opposition blames it on the government, and they charge him with doing that. And then what they do is they give him 24 hours to prepare a defense. They give him 2 hours on the floor of the parliament to defend. They vote against him and kick him out. But it looks like parliament, right? It looks like a guy talking in parliament. It looks like parliament voting him out. What you don't see is that the charges against him are completely illegitimate. And again, we get American embassy cables saying they're fully aware on this, that they're aware of what they call capitalizing on Lugo's missteps. They talk about a plan to impeach him, quote, legally, but on spurious grounds. So you get this whole sort of thing again that it looks like parliament, but it's really a coup. And then again, you get all the South American states not recognizing this government. OAS kicks them out, Mercosur kicks them out, but you get the Americans recognizing the coup government and pressuring to get them back in. So again, you see this parliamentary move, with the U.S. recognizing the government, getting them back into international bodies. But it's not a parliamentary move. It's something that the cable show they know full well is a coup, that it was completely spurious grounds. So we get these models where you're evicting governments under the guise of the shuffling of parliament, but what you've really got is a coup. What I'm looking at in this paper that I just did with Anti-War is that perhaps this is what's happening in Ukraine, that we see again something that looks parliamentary but could be a coup. And in order to establish that, you'd have to establish two things. One is that it was actually a coup, that it looked parliamentary was actually a coup. And then the second thing you'd have to establish is that, at least in part, there's an American hand behind this. So what I'm looking at in the paper, you know, Ukraine and 21st Century Coups, is there evidence that what looked like a change in the configuration of the parliament was actually a coup? And in part, can an American hand be found behind this coup? Does it look like Honduras and Paraguay?
Well, and of course, okay, well, first of all, we're about to have to take a break here in just about a minute and a half, so I want to save the evidence. I want to, you know, go let you go down the list of evidence and make your case as well as you can there. But, you know, it brings up, of course, the question of the current crisis now with the apparent secession of Crimea, which is, I guess, in progress, but it looks like they're going to leave Ukraine and rejoin Russia. The Russian parliament has already agreed to take them back, I think. I don't know. I mean, it's not a done deal yet, but I think they're having a plebiscite in Crimea in a few weeks or something. So, I mean, this is a really big deal the way this has played out. There's, you know, some real risk of a civil war inside Ukraine, or maybe the, you know, the violent splitting of the country. And of course, America and Russia are at the highest alert type of face-off that they've been since the end of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And not that I'm trying to be too alarmist and say, oh, we're on the verge of nuclear war or anything, but it is... It's a big stupid fight that I disapprove of, and I think that you know, most people would prefer. In fact, the polls are saying that 14% of the American people are saying that they think it's our responsibility to determine outcomes in Ukraine, one way or the other, militarily or otherwise. But so, you know, for people who aren't, you know, following the news that closely, this is not just an academic exercise about you know, how the CIA and the NED get things done in the world. But it's also, you know, a lesson in consequences and possible very severe mass extinction type threatening consequences at play. And also, I guess this is what I was going to say before I forgot there for a minute, Ted, was that responsibility is kind of a vague concept. It's a matter of quality, not quantity. There's no real scale of 1 to 10. So, of course, there's always going to be, like you talked about, losers of the last election, but who really are from there and who probably have, I mean, after all, if they live under a government, they must have some real grievances about how their government is forcing them to live. And so it's not to diminish the right of people to overthrow their government or the will of real Ukrainians to do so. But we do have to point out of which states have the real power in the world and can really make these things happen or not. And so I'm sorry for talking so long, but we're going to take this break, and then it's going to be your turn when we get back. It's Ted Snyder, antiwar.com today. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at ScottHorton.org. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Everybody knows George Washington was just a sock puppet of the French. Getting their regime changed, humiliating the British there, Yorktown. Anyway, I don't know. These things are all matters of perspective and all that. Ted Snyder, he's written this article, Ukraine and 21st Century Coups. It's at antiwar.com today. And do you have any comment about either, one, the danger that we're in because of this that I was going on and on about, or two, any kind of subtle point to make about degrees of responsibility for Western intervention in Ukraine as it coincides with the wishes of the people on the street of whichever factions there.
You know, I think the thing is, when you look at the wishes of the people on the street, you've got to look at the idea of Yanukovych getting elected in 2010 by an election that was considered, you know, fair by international observers. And then you look at, are the people in the streets saying something different than the people in the polls? Has there been a change? If there's been a change, right, then maybe there'd be a change in election or a change of government. But the thing is, all the polls that have been taken, both by Americans, by the British, by the Ukrainians, the polls show that when you ask people who they wanted to go with, the economic union with Russia, or the economic with union with Europe, the numbers are exactly the same as the numbers in 2010. You know, they're split. So what looks like this change, it wasn't a change, right? So it doesn't change the electoral result. It doesn't overturn it. There was this illusion of this call for change, but the people asking for change were the same people that lost. So, you know, is there a responsibility to go in and protect or correct some kind of, you know, imbalance or change? The thing is, there wasn't a change. So then you look at, if there wasn't a change, then how did this happen, right? Was it a coup, and was there U.S. involvement? And that's, I think, where you'd want to look at the evidence and ask, was this really not a change in public opinion, but was this really a coup that was assisted or orchestrated from outside because we changed what we wanted in the Ukraine, not that Ukrainians changed what they wanted in the Ukraine.
Right. Okay. So now let's go through the evidence here, because I think it's really important going forward. Of course, the media narrative for any foreign policy crisis is always that history began yesterday and you don't need to understand the context of any of this. So this show is supposed to be the antidote for that. So as we go forward here, I think it's important. I think this is your motivation for writing this article. Let's go ahead and make sure we've got all the best evidence we have so far, at least in one place. If people want to refute it, that's great. Let them try. But make the case for what all is known about American intervention in this regime change in Ukraine.
Okay, so we have two things. The first is, you have to look at, was it a coup, or was it just parliament? And the second was, if it was a coup, was America or Europe involved? So I'll go.
And you got to look at the clock. We got 9 minutes.
Yeah, we got 9 minutes. So I'll move fast. But this is the heart of the idea. Was it a coup? So the first thing, it happens in three stages. The first thing you have is that the security forces decide to stop protecting government buildings, and they allow the protesters to come into the government buildings, to take over the government buildings. Now that you've got them in there, you get an opposition that wants to change the government. So they seize upon timing.
And so it was the parliament that was the boss of the security forces. Is that right?
Well, it's complicated. You know, a couple of things happen. One is, you get this sort of, Yanukovych agreed that he would share power, move elections forward, and pull back security, and you get the mob taking advantage of that. There was also Victoria Nuland having a meeting with the wealthiest of the Ukrainian oligarchs and telling him that if you violently oppose the people of the street, if you oppose them, we're not just going to sanction Ukraine, we're going to sanction you, Ukrainian business. So the guy that funds Yanukovych's party is threatened not to let the security police block anybody. So is there a connection there? I don't know. The timing's good. They pull back. The mobs get into the parliament. At the time it happened, at the very moment it happened, most of the MPs for the eastern and southern Ukraine, and they're the ones that would side with Yanukovych, they're not there because they're at a congress of politicians in another part of Ukraine. So when all these votes happen to kick Yanukovych out, his supporters weren't there to cast their ballots. But what you do have is these sort of fascist thugs that had come in off the street from, you know, Svoboda and Right Factor, and they're walking around there, and so Yanukovych's supporters, they're fleeing for their lives. And the third thing that happens is, with that kind of intimidation, you get these votes happening, replacing the president, replacing the parliament. So it looks like parliamentary votes, right? But the guys who would vote against it had either were not there or were chased out, the police stopped protecting it, people come in. It's actually a coup. And then, because I guess we're running out of time, and then you look quickly at, you know, how was this contributed from the outside. One of the really interesting things is that I think that the West set the triggers that set this thing going, because this is always presented as Yanukovych abandoned an economic union with Russia, with Europe, and sided instead with an economic union with Russia. What no one tells us is that it was the states in Europe that told Ukraine, you've got to pick one or the other. They said, if you pick Europe, you can't deal with Russia. Mm-hmm. Putin didn't do that. Putin told them, there's no reason why you can't have both of us helping you. So the West sets these terms that you've got to choose one or the other, Europe or Russia. And then they make it impossible to choose Europe because the deal has such stringent austerity measures that it would crash the Ukrainian economy. But the second thing, which doesn't get talked about at all, is that it also included what they called security policies that subordinated Ukraine to NATO. Mm-hmm. So first they say, pick Europe or Russia. But if you pick Europe, austerity measures are going to collapse you, and you've got to be subordinate to NATO. So pick Europe or Russia, but you can't pick Europe. It forces Yanukovych to pick Russia, so he can't choose the West, he picks Russia, and that sets the stage for the protest. So now you have a protest in the street. So the next thing you do is you protect and you nurture the protest.
So either they're brilliantly Machiavellian or they're completely ridiculously stupid.
I don't think this one was stupid. I think they knew they had a country divided, and whichever one Yanukovych picked, the other side was going to be really upset. So they set the stage to make the side they wanted upset, and then immediately America's on the ground supporting the protest. John McCain's there whipping them up. Victoria Nuland's there whipping them up. You provide cover to the protest on the street by criticizing not the people throwing, Molotov cocktails and violently trying to change a democratic government. You criticize the government for trying to stop this violent coup in the street. So you give legitimacy to the protest. Then the next thing you do is you find out that we've been financing the protest. The National Endowment for Democracy is funding 65 organizations inside the Ukraine. And Victoria Nuland, boasted to the Ukrainian Foundation conference that the state has given $5 billion in assistance to these pro-democracy movements in Ukraine. So you trigger the protest, you protect the protest, you give it legitimacy, you finance it, and then we get this intercepted phone message from Victoria Nuland that the sensationalist Western media just focuses on her vocabulary. She said a dirty word. And what they miss is this plotting to decide who's going to be in. And the guy they picked, Yatsenyuk, is indeed in. But the most important line was Victoria Nuland telling the ambassador of Ukraine that the West needs to, quote, midwife this thing. And, in my article, I call that a metaphorical admission of America's role in the coup, whereas they're midwifing it. And at one point, she even says in it that, Biden's willing to do the midwifery. So you get
She says glue it, too. We got to glue this thing
together.
Yeah,
they talk about needing the UN to glue it to get mm-hmm. Europe out. But, this key line is this admission that we're midwifing the coup. We've picked the guy we want in. So that's all there. So what we get is this evidence that it really did look like there had been a shift in the parliament, and it really did look like Yanukovych's guys had come over to the side and voted him out. But in fact, it wasn't that. It wasn't a vote at all for the reasons I gave earlier. Mm. And then we see this very much an American hand in it, admitting to midwifing it, at least in part financing it, backing it up in the streets, providing it cover. And what you get is a situation that looks exactly like what we saw in Honduras and Paraguay. And that's the thrust of the article. It's not. I'm not just saying something about Ukraine. I'm saying there is this pattern here that we can see of this new kind of coup that looks like a shuffling in parliament, but in fact has, the hidden hand behind it, that it's a coup so subtle that it's not even seen to be a coup. It seemed to be democracy in action, and it wields democracy as a weapon against democracy.
Right. And then, in this case, it really is amazing, as you say, since this phone call was leaked, where, some of these people, media people, they heard the whole phone call and understood what it was. I mean,
absolutely.
After all, even the most superficial coverages, why is she cursing the EU? Not because they're on Russia's side. She's cursing the EU because they're not moving fast and effectively enough in regime changing the government in Ukraine. Simple as that.
And what you get is a Western media that catches on to two things. One is Nuland swore, and the other is, look, the Russians intercepted a phone call. Ironic,
yeah.
Given everything that's going on. Sensationalism about the intercept and the F word, there's barely a Western media that talked about her straight up saying, We're orchestrating this coup. Here's the guy we want in. Here's who we want him talking about. We need to send somebody. I mean, you've got this phone call that's an admission of a U.S. coup in Ukraine, and all the papers talk about is the Koya Newlands war.
And listen, I think that you made the most important point about the regime change here is what you said about the sanctions, that they told the billionaires there, look, if you don't forsake this guy right now, we're going to seize your bank account. And at that point, the guys that support the Party of Regions, Yanukovych's party, the billionaires, some of the billionaires, one faction of them anyway, or a collection of them, they decide, all right, you got to go, pal, and they quit supporting him for their end in the parliament, too. And that was really the end of that, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
and that's why I feel bad, because I got people on my Facebook page saying, no, man, the people on the street really hated that guy. And I'm going, yeah, okay, but they're not the ones who overthrew him. You know, it would be like if you had an Occupy movement and then Petraeus overthrew Obama. You going to give the Occupy movement credit for that? I don't think so, you know?
Yeah, and Scott, maybe they did hate him, and none of what I'm saying is to say that Yanukovych was a good president. I mean, I'm not defending him, and I'm sure some of the grievances that were there were real, but it wasn't those grievances that you know, escalated the coup. It wasn't those grievances that took over on the street. It was the maneuvering that used this shift to the Russian Union as an excuse. And that shift was sort of compelled by the West and then seized upon, and other forces took over on the street. And we see all the time, you know, we saw that in Egypt, too, with a movement starting as a genuine movement and then getting hijacked and used as a coup in another way. And there, too, it looked like, you know, they tried to make it look like democracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, they lose sometimes, like in Egypt, but then only for about a year and a half, and then they won Egypt back. They took over and hijacked the revolution in Libya and in Syria, and I guess they'll just keep moving on. At least, here's where we are today, at least they're not doing full-scale invasions like Iraq for now.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, the regime changes just keep rolling on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ted. You do a great job writing about this stuff. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
All right, everybody. That's Ted Snyder. He's at antiwar.com today. Ukraine and 21st century coups. And that's it. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who provides his subscribers with a very real window into his investments, updating them on every move he makes in the markets. Right now, Mike's anticipating a bear and is dumping all his stocks while the getting is good, investing instead in gold and the commodities. Protect your assets and learn the wise ways of the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. And check out Mike Swanson's great contribution to the history of the rise of the American Empire and the war state, available at scotthorton.org/Amazon.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.